You're listening to Beyond the Ribbon, a podcast of the Cancer Survivorship Center, powered by 24 Hours in the Canyon. This podcast is brought to you by Auto Inc. Auto Inc. is a distinguished family of dealerships redefining automotive excellence. Be sure to check out their website at autoinc.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ribbon. My name is Ryan Parnell, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and oncology nurse, Pam McMillan.
Ryan, how are you today?
Pam, I am good, and I know I say this a lot, but I'm really looking forward to today's episode.
You know, it's always exciting to see what our guest has to bring to the table and enlighten our listeners with their expertise. You know, one thing with being diagnosed with cancer, sometimes we don't think of it being a younger generation disease. Maybe it's for the older, but you know, it seems like we're seeing more and more younger people getting diagnosed with small children or young adult children. Yeah. And you know, I don't know how that would be. I know raising a teenager is hard, but I can't imagine what cancer puts on the plate, you know, how complex parenting can become.
Right. Times have changed, and we know that parenting is a challenge in and of itself, not to mention the challenges compounded by having a cancer diagnosis in a family. So Pam, let's get to our guests. You know, it's great to see, as you mentioned, to hear what our guests have to say, because we managed to find some folks that, you know, we don't have access to people like this here in Amarillo. And it's great to learn from folks that have the expertise in this and bring this to the table to our listeners. So really, really excited, you guys, to introduce our two guests today from the Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center that is a part of the UNC School of Medicine. Now, the cool thing is, what you're thinking, why are you talking about those folks from the Cancer Center? Well, they operate a clinic called Parenting with Cancer. And if that doesn't summarize kind of what we just talked about, I don't know what does. So let me just introduce our guests. We have Dr. Justin Yop. He's a clinical psychologist who specializes in providing therapeutic services for families facing cancer. And he works with Cindy Rogers, who has a doctorate of jurisprudence. She's an attorney who uses her legal experience and expertise to network and guide patients and families to the right resources. Thank you guys for joining us. Let's just start where we always like to at the very beginning. Tell us kind of a little bit about yourself and kind of share a little bit about your clinic.
Well, Ryan, I'll start. Thanks so much for having us. We really appreciate the invite, and nice to come to you guys in Amarillo from here in North Carolina. Yeah. So like you said, I'm a psychologist, and Cindy is, well, she's a jack of all trades. I'll introduce herself in a second. But we both work at the Cancer Hospital as part of the Comprehensive Cancer Support Program. And so in our own ways, we help care for and support and advocate for patients and their caregivers, patients going through cancer and their caregivers. And a lot of my role is to provide psychotherapy for folks with cancer, those affected by cancer. And over the years, I've kind of taken an interest in families affected by cancer, and thus parents, so moms and dads who have children at home or children that they are, you know, guardians of, and have cancer. And, you know, we've known this for a long time. There's been some research to show that it really impacts the family functioning. It impacts, if you're a parent going through cancer, it's different than if you're not. And not to say one is harder or easier, but it's just different. And even some of the research bears that out, that if you're a mom or a dad with cancer, it affects your treatment decision-making. You're more likely to pursue curative options, even in the face of not very optimistic outcomes. The thought is because just the idea of not being there for your children is just unimaginable. And so that, with that being the backdrop and my role as a therapist, that's kind of my part of how we kind of got to the clinic. I'll let Cindy kind of share her background, and then we can talk more about the clinic that we run.
Yeah. Hi, thank you so much for inviting us to be part of this program. So I am an attorney, as you mentioned, and I'm just really fortunate to have a position in the Comprehensive Cancer Support Program. My role there primarily is to manage a charitable fund for our cancer patients. And so I'm able to help folks who have financial hardship in, say, cost of transportation getting to their care, or the cost of lodging. Perhaps there's food insecurity. We can help with meals. So I meet with our mostly lower income families to assess their needs and help to use our charitable foundation resources to fill some of those gaps so that they can get the care they need and they're not having to make those decisions about, whether they're going to have to miss their appointment that day because they don't have gas for their car. Simple things like that. So very fortunate that I have am able to support our patients in that way. But what's happened over the years is, because I'm an attorney and I'm listening to patients' stories, I may then hear that, oh, they also have some maybe unmet legal needs that perhaps I can't help with in my role in the support program, but I can help maybe refer them to resources in the community, whether that's our Legal Aid of North Carolina or other advocacy groups, in the community. So it's been a great way to utilize my legal training to benefit patients, and oftentimes patients who would not otherwise be able to afford legal resources or legal services. So one of the areas where I've tried to advocate over the years is to help patients get advanced directives, so healthcare powers of attorney and living wills, and also to help them recognize other estate planning documents and services that they might need to help plan for the future of their families. And that's sort of where Justin and I came together, is in that piece of Justin helping folks now with caring for their families by helping them communicate in an age-appropriate way with their children. And then me stepping in and saying, hey, let's talk about helping to care for your family going forward in the future. And are there some things we can do to help you do that?
It's really an interesting pathway that you took from being basically a social worker and navigating a lot of that as a lawyer. And then, oh, by the way, then people start asking, legal questions, which I wonder in your mind was like, oh, well, this is easy. I got this. I know. I mean, this is in my wheelhouse, rather than trying to figure out food, insecurities, as you said, or transportation. It's quite an interesting journey.
It is, and I was actually speaking with some law students yesterday at the UNC Law School, and I was explaining my job as a law school exam, where each case is a case of issue spotting. It's like, okay, so you need to see social services for so you can get your Medicaid, and you need to go to the Social Security office and apply for your disability, or we need to get you to legal aid to help them help with your eviction. It's been gratifying to be able to utilize my training in that way.
Oftentimes, when someone is diagnosed with cancer, we got to get our ducks in a row. Is there tips that you could give our listeners, for those that have children? What are some things that they really need to concentrate whenever there is a diagnosis of cancer?
Well, so there is, I think, four documents that are really core to a complete estate plan. First and foremost, I think everybody should have is what we call an advance directive. And that can go by a couple of different terms. Sometimes an advance directive can be one document, and within that one document, it contains both a healthcare power of attorney and what's commonly known as a living will. So that healthcare power of attorney is where you name somebody to help you make healthcare decisions if you're not able to make the decision yourself. And that's really important. Now in North Carolina, if you don't have a healthcare power of attorney, and you're not able to speak on your own behalf, then there are laws that say, who your next of kin is or who's going to be able to speak for you. So it's particularly important for someone if you don't want the person who is your next of kin to be your decision maker. And so you need to write it down and it needs to be in a legal document. And every state is different as far as what the requirements are to create that legal document. In North Carolina, we have a requirement that the document be signed and witnessed and notarized. Some states only require a notary, some states only require witnessing. So I think, I can't speak to what the rules are, say, for Texas, but here, it's not a it, there are some roadblocks for being able to easily do an advance directive for that reason, because you need to have both witnesses and a notary, and those witnesses cannot be employees of the health of your healthcare provider. So I can't witness, Justin couldn't witness, none of our nurses or aides or doctors could be a witness. So one of my jobs is flagging down folks in the waiting rooms, caregivers of other patients to be witnesses for our folks who are trying to do advance directives. So first and foremost is that healthcare power of attorney, though. And secondly is the commonly known as a living will, not to be confused with a last will and testament, different documents. Okay. The better term for living will is a declaration for a natural death. So this allows you to express your wishes for the kind of care you receive at the end of life. And it's really a really just telling your family members, your healthcare agent, your healthcare team, this is what I want at the end of life if I'm not able to speak for myself. And so it's really important to communicate that. And sometimes folks are uncomfortable having that hard conversation and writing that stuff down. And we have to meet people where they are. So I do encourage folks that, if you're not ready to write down what your wishes are for end of life care, at least talk to your family, talk to the person who's going to be your healthcare decision maker about what you want, so that at the very least, they're going to work, try to always act in a way that's meeting your wishes. So that's the very first thing that folks can do. And I think most healthcare providers can provide that in their offices or in the hospital setting. We can do that at our hospital. Doesn't require a lawyer. The forms are not difficult. At least there, and you can get a lot of, there are lots of different forms out there. There's probably, Texas probably has legislative forms that may have a lot of legalese, but then there are probably all kinds of, there are other forms that we would meet Texas statutory requirements, and you could, and they're written in a more, common language. The next document is a financial power of attorney. That allows somebody to help you manage your personal business while you're living. That is the kicker with that one. A lot of folks think that a financial power of attorney allows somebody to manage your estate after death. That's a common misconception. So if I have cancer, I'm hospitalized, I can't get out and pay my taxes or register my car or apply for disability, the person that I've named in my financial power of attorney can do that for me. And a spouse does not have the legal authority to do those things for you. That's another common misconception. So a lot of what we do in our clinic is educating folks on this stuff. So even if they're not ready to prepare these documents right away, or maybe they even have the documents already done, but they don't know what to do with them, we're able to educate them about that. And finally, the last document is a will. And that is basically writing down what happens to your stuff if you die. And then usually naming somebody who's going to be the executor of that, manage that for you. And this can also be where you include, your wishes for who will be the guardian of your children if anything should happen to you. And whether or not you need a trust, that's usually called a living trust. That's beyond my expertise as an attorney. I am not an estate planning specialist. And so, that's where I sort of punt to my colleagues in the legal community.
It's kind of interesting, Pam, as going through the list and talking about all of this, as Cindy mentioned about the living will, made me think back to our podcast we did this last year on five wishes. And, with our end of life planning that we have available here at the Survivorship Center, Cindy, I know exactly what you mean about running out and grabbing someone. Our person who helps with that and sits down and does the consultations came in and grabbed me. Hey, would you come out and be a witness? I'm like, what am I witnessing? What are we doing? I just need you to sign this. This is what's going on. This is their wishes. This is what they want, blah, blah, blah. You're just signing it. You're a witness. I'm like, great. I'll be happy to do it. So I know exactly what you mean by being grabbed someone from the waiting area. But, Pam, there's so much to unpack here that I bet you, I know I have maybe a third probably a third of what I have is here. I don't have the other two thirds.
We need to be prepared, right?
I don't feel prepared at all. And I hope you guys that are listening, if you're like me and unprepared, we need to make a very concerned effort to be prepared, because it's not terribly challenging to get all this done, is it? It just takes a little bit of time and obviously some money, some resources with a lawyer.
And that's where what I'm focusing my attentions on right now is trying to build a list, if you will, a group of estate planning attorneys in our community who are offering to do pro bono service for our families, our low-income families who aren't able to afford preparation of a will or guardianship. Not everybody wants or needs all of these documents, but when there is something that's outside of the scope of what I'm able to do, then, I'm working to create this list of folks who are offering their services to do that.
So Cindy, is there any other legal documents or legal things that we should have in place for the future for our kids?
Those are the big ones I'm looking at. There could be other things. Again, that's where I might, look to estate planning experts or family law experts. Justin and I are meeting folks who have of non-traditional families, and there may be step parents, and so our patients are often trying to figure out if their child's other parent is incarcerated, for example, what do we do to plan for the future of that child? So I mean, there's so many different circumstances. So that's where that issue spotting comes in. And we try to say, okay, let's figure out if you're divorced and you have there's a step parent, but then there's still the biological parent is involved. And there are concerns about who's going to be the best suited to raise that child. If the parent should pass away, so it can get really complicated. And I'm not, it's really beyond my expertise. And that's where I just try to know when to when to call in somebody who's smarter than I am.
It makes perfect sense to have both of y'all, your disciplines together. You know, on paper, reading about the program and everything, it's like, oh yeah, this is perfect. Now listening and understanding and seeing that makes perfect sense. Now I'm going to segue into Justin and Cindy. I don't know if he's the person that's much more smarter that you're referring to or not.
No.
On something.
No. That would be someone different.
But Justin, talk to us about the other side, you know, if you will, of parenting with cancer and parenting through cancer. How do we help our listeners who have little kids or just children in general, don't have to be little kids, but children in general, work through the various things that have to be worked through?
It's a good question. I think the number one first thing to think about and to consider, which kind of serves as the foundation for everything in your relationship with your child around this issue, is communication, right? How are you and are you talking to your children about what's going on? Are you telling them that you have cancer? Are you telling them what your treatments are going to be? Are you helping them anticipate changes they're going to see? Are you demonstrating that this is something we can talk about, even if we don't really want to? Are you establishing that trust around this issue? And that's something we talk with parents a lot in our clinic, right? Is, you know, I think, you know, for anyone who's a parent, you can understand that there's almost an instinct to protect your child, right? That comes with the territory. And so sometimes that can turn into, I'm protecting my child by not telling them, because I don't want them to worry, or they have an exam, or I don't want them to get depressed, or I don't want them to be anxious about what happens to me, so I'll protect them by not telling them. That rarely, if ever, works. And so what we advise parents, generally what we advise parents at the beginning is to be age appropriately honest, but to be honest with your children and establish that trust at the beginning around this issue. And so that means naming it, that means calling it cancer, that means giving an age appropriate biological description of what's going on. That means telling them changes that they're going to see so that when they see it, it's less surprising and shocking. It means clarifying that if you feel poorly because of chemotherapy, that doesn't mean your cancer is getting worse. That means that you're taking medicine to address the cancer. And none of that can happen if there's not a avenue of communication around this. And that all starts with the first conversation and making sure that you talk to your children and that you're the one that tells them about the cancer, not that they overhear it, not that they piece it together themselves, not that they figure it out some other way. You want to establish trust from the beginning. You want to control the narrative, and you do those things by initiating discussion from the outset. And so that's what we talk to a lot of parents about, and some that when we meet them, they've already done this. And so we're able to, you know, accurately praise them and tell them, you know, basically why what they did was such a good thing. And for parents who have struggled with that, we certainly can understand that. And then at the same time, lay out some suggestions for how to increase and enhance communication. So that's not everything, but it is absolutely crucial. Being open and honest about your cancer.
Is there ever a time where too much sharing can get in trouble?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I don't know that we run into that too much. Cindy, maybe you have some different memories than I do, but I think the tendency to undershare is much greater than the tendency to overshare. I'm sure there's some examples of that, but I can't off the top of my mind, since we've been doing this clinic for almost a year now, think of really any examples where that's been an issue.
Justin does a great job of, you know, giving parents sort of the words to use that are age appropriate. And sometimes you might have kids, you know, that are several years apart within a family, and the way you explain it to one child might be different than the way you would talk to the older child, say, for example. And Justin just gives the parents tools words, language, sometimes little games, that they can play to help, open up the dialogue and conversation. It's really remarkable to watch.
Yeah, I think that's really what I mean. This is about connections and families and secret keeping in the service of protecting doesn't usually work, and it often backfires. And I think most parents can appreciate that, but having some tools or some language or a little encouragement to open up that communication, I think can go a long way. And it's really that's how we frame it. Cindy and I, it's how we frame our clinic, right? We do all these visits together. We're sitting together in the same room with the patient or on the same screen if we do it virtually. And it's framed as ways to take care of your children now, right? And in the present and emotionally and communication, that's what I mainly talk about. And then in the future, that's of course what Cindy talks about, planning things you can do now to plan for your children's future. Both legally and guardianship, things like that. And look, those are tough conversations, right? Because no one really likes to talk about the what if, and we can spend a lot of mental energy and physical energy trying to avoid those things. And so, Cindy, I kind of have it as a tenet of our clinic that we don't shy away from those conversations. We don't cram them down anyone's throats. But we don't want to be a part of the we don't talk about it brigade, right? So we kind of lay it on the table, and I can't tell you how many parents have appreciated what Cindy does when she lays these things on the table and talks about wills and future guardianship concerns. And how many of them have said, yeah, I was kind of thinking about that, but have never done anything about it, much less verbalized it, because it's a scary thing to talk about, and you're spending a lot of energy and a lot of resources to not make that happen. But some time and consideration for the what if is usually a good idea, and Cindy is great about laying that out in a way that just makes a lot of sense and doesn't seem as scary, but seems practical and the right thing to do for your family. But yeah, it's something when we talked about this clinic that I think Cindy was, but I'll speak for myself. I was a little nervous about that. Maybe this would be a little too kind of frontal, right? Kind of a frontal assault on what they try not to think about. But that I can tell you, we've had one person that I remember, Cindy, one person that made it clear that he didn't want to go there, that was kind of too much, didn't want to go there. And so of course we respect to that, and we didn't go there.
Sure.
But that's been the only one. Most parents are thinking about it, and this is a way to get them talking about it and acting upon it.
Yeah, for both of our parts, I would say. And some folks come to us where they really want to talk to Justin, and then I pop in and sort of do this cold call of let's talk about your estate planning, and it may be that no, not really ready to do that. And so in that case, it's just about, hey, I'm going to send you a flyer that describes these things and why it's important, and you can call me if you need something more. That might be the extent of our conversation. But it then might also, though, trigger just a deeper conversation. And so that's where we hope to, at least put a crack the door open a little bit for those folks who haven't thought about it, and give them the opportunity.
Pam, does that sound familiar to some of the things we do?
Absolutely. If we can take some of the burden away and help our patients in this time of need, any way that we can, what a blessing.
I remember Justin, as you said, being a little hesitant, a little nervous when we started saying, hey, listen, we've had a lot of our folks asking about end of life planning and this and that. And it was one of those deals. It's kind of like, I was very uneducated about all the pieces and parts. And I thought, no, if this is a need, we need to figure out how to make this available. And we did, and it's really made the difference in folks, to the extent of what we've been able to provide. It does. It's kind of like we talk about, I'm just going to throw the spaghetti on the wall, see what sticks, and you take what you need. And Cindy, as you said, you may not think that you need it now, but I'm here when you need it and when you're ready for it.
And I think that we've tried to figure out how to do it in a way that says, you know, this is not about giving up hope. This is about taking a burden off your shoulders so that you can concentrate on getting well and pay attention to your family. But that's a it's a careful road to tread.
Yeah, and we do it in other walks of life, right? Like, I don't plan on getting in a car wreck today, but I have car insurance, right? But this is, that's kind of an academic exercise to make that analogy, right? It's that this is a little closer to home, and this isn't, you could get hit by the proverbial bus. This is when there's a real threat. And so talking about it, planning, all that, it's really hard. And what you guys sound like, what you do, and what we do, really what Cindy does, is not just a service of talking about and educating about wills and advanced directives and these things, but kind of the unspoken service of just putting these things on the table, right? Not and even if it means planting a seed, or even if it normalizes it in some way, even if by the end of the time it's like, okay, well, that wasn't so bad, and I can talk about it, the little cells in my body don't care if I'm talking about it, don't care if I'm thinking about it. They're not going to change, right? But those things are separate from cancer outcomes. I like to think that we move the needle in the right direction in that, in most cases.
Justin, what about counseling with the kiddos? We have some wonderful licensed professional counselors we work with, that we do provide one-on-one with children that mom or dad is going through treatment. I know that may sound like a easily answered question. What about counseling? But give us your take on that, if you would.
So, my take is that for children, just because mom or dad has cancer doesn't mean they need therapy, right? That doesn't necessarily warrant that. I do think that kind of having a lower threshold for what would maybe have a child see a therapist makes sense, right? That maybe in quote unquote normal times, what might trigger a consultation, that threshold should be lowered, just because of the stress on in the family. But within our program, we don't quite have the bandwidth to see children for individual counseling. What we do a lot of, we see all families in the one-time consultation that's free of charge, and just, Cindy does, we each do our parts. And in about, I'd say, half of those families, I see the patient and or the patient and spouse, and sometimes the kid gets folded into that for follow-up counseling or therapy. That's, I would guess, somewhere around half of the cases that we meet with in consultation for me turn into therapy cases. And in those, sometimes the children are brought in, and we kind of meet as a family to really work on the communication and clarify any misunderstandings. But that's not to be confused with like child therapy. So for that, what we have to do is really rely on providers in the community, just because, again, we don't have that bandwidth to offer that service for now. But hey, who knows? We just started doing this less than a year ago. Maybe we'll come back for your podcast in a couple of years and have more to tell you.
Do you feel like maybe teenagers have a harder time than the younger kids dealing
In
with
general, yes. No.
it? Have a lot going on.
Yeah, I have a lot going on. I think it can be, because if you're that age, you probably have, certainly compared to younger children, you have a better understanding of what cancer can mean. That's probably a hot word for a reason, because you know that not everyone who has cancer survives it. Social and peer pressures are, of course, different at that age. what it looks like for mom or dad not to have any hair or to be sick or to be known as the person who has a mom and dad with cancer. Yeah, I think that can take on a different, can have a different resonance when a child is in his or her adolescent years. I don't actually know of any research to support that, but that might just be a gap in my knowledge. But my instinct is that for most, I would be more concerned about an adolescent usually than I would be a 6-year-old. But that's a blanket statement, to be sure.
I think it's very plausible. There's so, as I said earlier, there's a lot on the legal attorney side to unpack, and man, is there a lot on the communication side to unpack. And we've talked about this, how what would you guess, Pam? 98% of our podcasts, that one word of communication comes up no matter what our topic is. Well, I mean, it's huge. It is so big, and it is even bigger when you're dealing with a cancer diagnosis.
If it was just so simple,
Right,
right?
right.
Is there anything else that y'all would like to talk about, your program that we haven't covered?
And I think we've really covered it all. And I think what our hope was in developing this clinic is that we're able to see patients earlier in their diagnosis so that they're able to have thoughtful conversations with their families. They're able to think thoughtfully and in a non-urgent way about preparing these, legal documents. And so I think that's we see people at all, throughout the can their cancer journey, if you will. But our hope is really that we can see people earlier.
Cindy, that's been our hope as well from the moment Pam and I, cut the red ribbon, the grand opening and opened up our doors. There is not the perfect time, but the perfect time is as soon as possible after diagnosis to get involved. Whether it's in a case like this with getting legal documents in place, whether it's a case like I know at, with all of our programs that we offer, the stuff that's offered there at your comprehensive cancer support program. I mean, you guys are offering your support program offers a lot of the similar things that we do, and we are just huge proponents and fans of saying the sooner we can get you to, get engaged, whether it's getting up and moving or coming to a nutrition class or meeting folks that are 10-year survivors of your type of cancer, it makes a difference. And then throwing on top of it with kiddos, it certainly does. But that's our goal as well. So I would encourage, if you're listening to this podcast and you're in Amarillo or you're in North Carolina, get involved with those support programs. And it doesn't have to be the traditional support groups or anything like that. It's getting engaged with that community that can make such a big difference.
Justin, did you have anything to add?
No, I think Cindy, as usual, said it very well, that we, it's a good point that we don't want to be having these conversations with parents late in the game, right? This is something that can and ought to be done earlier. And sometimes for some families, there's a window of opportunity, and we want to connect with families and serve them on the front end of that window and out on the back end.
Especially one last thing, especially Justin, you and Cindy, much like us, it's free.
Yeah, so we the this the first time consultation at least is free. Then we have
Yeah.
different ways that we have to have to do it here at within our clinic. But yeah, we wanted to as a priority to reduce barriers to connecting with these families. And so whether that's meeting, via telehealth, or whether that's not charging, whatever it is, we wanted to make sure we connected with these parents.
Right.
A blessing you are to your community.
Yeah.
That leads us to our last segment. We are sponsored by the Otto Inc. family. Do you have a Auto Inc. inspiring moment that you could share with us? And I see Justin pointing to Cindy.
And Cindy pointing to Justin.
Oh no,
Well,
I mean.
we did talk about this yesterday, and we were sort of hard pressed to find like one, say, patient or story. But I think that the overarching theme of that I can point to is that the feedback we get is how grateful patients are. That they are able to, one patient wrote to us and said that she used the tools that Justin had helped her with to speak with her children, that and that the conversation went really well, better than she thought it would, and it wasn't that hard, and how relieved she was. And then that, you know, that she had worked with me to do her advanced directive and had the resources for getting other legal documents in her community, and that that was a relief for her to know that she had, again, those resources to be able to move forward and do things to support her family.
You know, we always have the theory we can we have a toolbox and we can give them all the tools to make this journey a little bit easier. So sounds like we're doing the exact same thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just reaffirms, right, that when you hear stories like that, that I mean, because we're in the same boat with you guys. We're doing the right thing. You know, at that moment, you kind of go, yep, it changes that life and it makes a big difference. So definitely echo what Pam has said. Thank you guys so much for what you do for your patients, and for coming on and sharing with our folks here to learn a little bit more. And I'll tell you what, I mentioned this earlier, we don't have, and we've not utilized resources for the advanced directives and the living will and things like that. And so I'm just going to go ahead and say this. If you guys that are listening and you live here in the 26 counties of the Texas Panhandle and you need assistance like that, let us know. We will commit to try to find and ask those questions to find someone to help us with it, either at low cost or no cost. And I know that we've got connections within the legal community here in the Texas Panhandle. So, consider that to be something that we know we need to be offering. And this just reaffirmed that. So, thank you guys for that so much. And Pam, I tell you, I am so grateful for this podcast because I know there are people that listen to this that go, oh, that's what I need to get done. And we're really offering some great advice to folks.
Yes, we are. You know, like I said, there's two guarantees in life. You're born and you die. So as long as we're prepared, we're doing our family a favor.
That's right. That's right. Well, you guys listening to us today, be sure and share this podcast with anyone you know that is going through cancer. Listen, this is kind of a twofold podcast, right? I mean, you've got some, just because maybe you don't have children and you're not working through that. Cindy explained a lot of things that we, whether you have cancer or not, really need to be prepared for. And so, just everyone that has had a cancer diagnosis or is going through cancer, this podcast is beneficial. So be sure and share that with them. And then definitely let us know how we can help you. Pam, let's give them the phone number and our email address.
It is 806-331-2400. You can email us at info@24survivorship.org.
That's right. Super simple, real easy. Just get in touch with us. Let us know how we can help you. You may not need to, you don't even know where to turn to. We will help you. We will do the legwork for you. And then make sure you join us next time for another great episode of Beyond the Ribbon.
Thanks again for listening to Beyond the Ribbon. We'd like to extend a special thanks to the Auto Inc. family of dealerships as they have supported 24 Hours in the Canyon and the Cancer Survivorship Center since 2016. For more information on the Cancer Survivorship Center, please visit our website, 24survivorship.org.